Okay.
Thanks, Tony. So how about if everyone would mute themselves except for Sherry and Jan and Tony? So welcome to our second facilitator program focus call. Tonight we will start in with what I would call the guidelines or keys that a couple of years ago at a Green Cove facilitators retreat, Sherry brought to the retreat group. And there were, if I remember correctly, 9 of these, I think. And they were, I might call them guidelines or keys, I think, they were described as to facilitation practice. So I've been anxiously waiting for 2 years to hear more about these 9 guidelines, so this is a big time. But as you saw in the email, tonight our first focus is don't lose consciousness, keep custody of the eyes. So Sherry, would you be willing to just speak to that a little bit, or I could ask you some questions about it. What would be helpful?
Well, you know, it always helps me when somebody asks me a question. That'd be great.
All right. Well, I was thinking about this a little bit before the call and over the last couple of days, and the idea of don't lose consciousness, I'm going to break these up in 2 pieces, don't lose consciousness. Just imagining that when we're on the cushion, we can't really demand of ourselves that we not lose consciousness. There's some practice that has to have happened before we sit on the cushion to facilitate to have a chance, it seems, to not lose consciousness. So,
yes. If we bring that kind
that?
Of self-conscious standard to our facilitation, we're going to be in just a miserable place in a hurry, right?
Yeah.
So, yes. So what you're suggesting, that I would say is spot on, is that all of these practices are something that we do off the cushion, so that when we're on the cushion, they're just how we are. We're not having to become somebody else in order to facilitate.
Yes. And so looking at that, continuing to look at that, you know, one thing that occurred to me is maintaining the connection with the breath while I'm sitting on the cushion, it occurs to me that is possibly a how to practice in the moment with someone there, that I can still attend to the interaction and still maintain some awareness of the breath. And that's just what came up for me. I wonder what else you would offer us about
it's an interesting one with the custody of the eyes. There's another one that I was looking at just in the last couple of days. As I indicated, we're on a big push at the monastery to get ready for retreat season that starts on April 21st. And so it's just us. Well, it's just us and Chris. And, and so while we're down there, we're really quite casual in a sense because we're working. You know, we're doing all of these tasks. It requires a great deal of coordination and people interacting with one, helping, assisting, holding this, doing that, taking that, picking that. You know, so there's a great deal of conversation that's going on. And most of that conversation happens at a normal volume because that's appropriate to what we're doing. If we tried anything else, we'd be standing there all day going, what? What? But as soon as the retreat season starts, as soon as we are not in that working meditation mode, we go back to keeping custody of the voice. as well as custody of the eyes. Now, when we're working together, we can actually keep, we can maintain custody of the eyes because we don't need to be looking at each other to be listening to what the person is saying or to be assisting or in whatever way the person needs assistance. So custody of the eyes, you know, that's just a great thing to practice everywhere all the time. And that piece of as appropriate. So I can be out in the world and I can be maintaining custody of the eyes. And then when it's appropriate to be interacting with somebody in a way that they can relate to, then I can go into that mode because I'm aware of what's going on. I'm conscious of what's going on. And so with keeping custody of the eyes, knowing when I want to make eye contact with somebody and when I don't, as you indicate, being able to stay with the breath and awareness of the breath and to expand that to include everything that's going on around me, being aware of whether it's a time where I'm speaking in a whisper or I'm using a normal voice. I am known for having colorful language and being in landmark lingo self-expressed. And so I go back and forth with that as well because there are times when I'm extremely careful about what I say and how I say it and other times when I'm not. But it's not that I'm not conscious of what's going on in either case. So that's the don't lose consciousness. If we are present, then we can act appropriately to whatever circumstances we're in. If we lose consciousness, then we know what has happened to us. We're in trouble, right? So practicing those things of keeping custody of the eyes, speaking in a way that you choose to speak, behaving in a way that you choose to behave, doing everything that you do with conscious awareness is the best preparation we can have for being on the cushion.
And that's really, in many ways, even 1 month into this program, what is coming through, and I think I'm reading it in the blog, it's certainly what's coming through for me as well, is that as we're moving deeper into developing facilitation skills, the call is to be practicing these things all the time, to not be segregating our life from our practice. So I'm not just keeping custody of the eyes when I'm in my sitting group. I'm practicing all day long what it means to keep custody of the eyes.
That's right. What it means to be in conscious, compassionate awareness all the time. So if I'm with friends or family, that's not a time that I slip into unconsciousness so that I can be the person that they're used to me being. I think you know what I mean by that. This is time off. I don't have to be aware now because I'm just me. This is just around the house, or I'm in whatever circumstances that don't require awareness. Well, there's not a second in life that doesn't require full awareness, and that's what we want to be practicing.
And we hear often a guideline at a retreat, for instance, keep custody of the eyes, and as a retreatant, you know, I think of that often. I don't necessarily think of that sitting on the cushion, but either place, would you say more about, you know, I think I kind of know what it means to keep custody of the eyes, but just in terms of our training, how you would describe what that is?
Yeah. So when I'm facilitating, I am making eye contact with the person that I'm facilitating. And I have kind of an expectation that they're going to be attending to me in the same way. Because a great deal happens in an exchange like that. So if a person, if I'm facilitating somebody and they choose to maintain custody of the eyes, that's fine. I would expect them to maintain custody of the eyes all the time then. In other words, they don't maintain custody of the eyes when I'm talking to them, and then they're looking around the room the rest of the time. So in a group that I'm facilitating, the expectation is, you know, facilitator is fair game, right? Everybody can look at the facilitator if they want to. But it's not a requirement, right? So you can certainly be in a group and maintain custody of the eyes. That, you know, the one thing we don't do when we're in a group is look at other people in the group, right? So even when I'm facilitating, I rarely make eye contact or look at anybody else in the room other than the person that I'm talking with, because that's where the work is. Mm-hmm. If I'm facilitating somebody, I'm not talking to the whole room. If I am talking to the whole room, then I'll endeavor to make it clear that I'm talking to the whole room. Mm-hmm. Is that a clear distinction?
Oh, yeah, and I realize as you say that I don't think I've consciously ever said to myself that that's what's going on when you're in front of the room, but that absolutely that's what's going on.
Yeah.
That it's this person and this person and this person. It's not the group.
That's right. And the expectation, again, is that everyone in the group is approaching it as if I'm speaking with them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a, you know, so say I'm at group and one of the monks or one of the other facilitators is facilitating. If they're talking to somebody other than me, I don't count that as a vacation. You know, that's not where I sit there and we'll gather and think about what I'm going to say when it's my turn to talk. You know, I am taking everything that they're saying to that other person and applying it to my practice just as if they were talking to me. And I would hope that everybody in practice approaches a group situation or a facilitated situation in exactly the same way.
Because we're not going for a longer call this evening, I'm wondering about opening it now to other folks so we have as much time for people to ask questions and like that. Is it?
Sure.
Is that right to start an email?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. So if people want to ask or look at something related to this focus, that's great. We've started up our teaching practice support calls last week. So for people who facilitated those, if you want to look at something with Sherry related to that experience or just facilitation in general. So it doesn't have to be specific to this focus, but it certainly can be. So we'll just open it up, and I'll check back in when we get close to the end.
Thank you, Jan.
Thanks, Sherry.
This is Michael.
Hello, Michael.
Hey, Sherry. Hey, I have the sense when you're facilitating that you are speaking to the one person, and you're also maintaining an awareness of the whole room and, you know, if people are sitting up or lying down. I was wondering if you could just speak to that a little bit as well.
Well, yes, and it's what Jan mentioned about maintaining an awareness of the breath and also everything else that's going on. It's the same process. So our attention is on... So if you're facilitating, your attention is with the person that you're facilitating. That's first and foremost. But your awareness is expanded to include the whole room. So I can't say it any better than that. You know, there's a practice in Zen called Shikantaza, and what that apparently means. Literally, I don't speak Japanese, so this is all rumor. But the image is you're in a room, and somewhere at another part of the house, somebody opens a door a quarter of an inch, and you're aware of it. Okay? So it's having attention so focused on awareness, the awareness is so expansive that that there is a sensitivity to everything that's going on. And I will say that part of the fascination of that practice is that it requires every avenue of sensitivity that we have available to us, right? So it's not just visual, and it's not just sound. It's everything. There's a sensing the energy in the room, and there's mm-hmm. And all of you as facilitators know it. You can, you know, there you are facilitating something, and you just feel the energy tank. And so it's being aware of everything that's going on while maintaining a specific focus.
Great. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
This is Tracy.
Hey, Tracy.
Hey, Sherry. Mine is, there's two parts to it, and the first part is I have always facilitated with my eyes turned downward because it feels like I can, and I've done that thinking that I don't want to get into a relationship with the person. I really just want to, like, hear them. And so I'm wondering if your guidance is to play with trying to do more eye contact.
Well, I think it would be interesting, and especially in light of what we're talking about here. You know, could you make eye contact with them and not lose focus? Actually, I think it's a fascinating thing to practice facilitating not making eye contact with the person, because you really are training to use all of your other senses, right? I would be a little nervous about doing that simply because I feel like it would be more difficult for me to have a good sense of everything that's going on in the room. But maybe not. You know, maybe that level of sensitivity to what other people are doing and like that can be maintained. The thing about being in the guide position when we're in a group is that we really are accepting responsibility for the group. So people are meditating. You're facing inward. Everybody else is facing the wall. And the idea behind that is that they can relax completely because somebody is there ready to handle any emergency that arises. And so in that way, if I'm guiding a meditation, I'm meditating, yes, and I periodically just do a scan of the room just to make sure everybody seems to be okay because I'm responsible for them. So in the same way, in a facilitated group setting, I'm accepting responsibility for everything that goes on. So, for instance, if there were somebody in the group who wasn't maintaining custody of the eyes and was interfering with other people in a sense by watching them and that sort of, I would want to know that was going on so that I could address that with that person. So yeah, you might try making eye contact with the person you're facilitating and just watching what happens to you. Be kind of the opposite of what the rest of us would go through if we suddenly decided not to maintain eye contact when we were facilitating somebody.
Great. And, you know, the irony of it is I made that statement, and what I found in the monthly support call is when I'm not, this is the ironic part, is when I'm not in visual contact with someone, like on the phone, it feels like the spacing of, you know, the space between the interactions feels a lot more awkward, and it feels like I can hold a more spacious place when there's someone there versus being on the phone. And then the irony is, I was just saying that I'm not looking, you know, looking directly at the person, but I, you know, there is a visual of them. I'm just not looking at their eyes. So, I ran into that just feeling. And I know that with other, you know, I do a lot of phone work at work, and it's always trickier for me when that person's not there. It's harder to sense.
Yeah, we get a lot of of clues from visual, which is kind of the good news and the bad news. It's dangerous because it's so much conditioning, which is why, as a sangha, we practice not making eye contact with people, because, you know, it just kicks in the opinions and judgments and comparisons and all of that sort of thing. So, always something to see in everything.
Always something to see in everything. Thank you, Sherry.
You're welcome.
This is Dan.
Hey, Dan.
Hey, so I'm in a, I'm often in a group with one of the participants. And normally, yeah, eye contact looks fine. But maybe one group in 10, I just have this sense that it's putting a lot of pressure or requirement to share that person by looking at them before they share. And what I'm looking at about that is that it seems to come from a process of projecting what I believe might be going on with them before they open them up.
Which is why reflecting is such a powerful tool, right? All of our facilitation tools of reflecting and clarifying and drawing out, because it's true. It's true. We are projection machines, and it doesn't end just because we're sitting on a cushion.
Right.
You know,
I think we all
know that place as facilitators where, we lose sight of the fact that the other person didn't say whatever it is that we're thinking, and we reflect something back to them, and they kind of look at us and shake their head and go, no, not really. And that's that moment of realizing that I left them behind and went off on my own, thinking that I was with them, but I wasn't. So, yeah, to watch the projections is really important.
It's funny. It always leads to awkwardness, because when I notice, I get into a loop where I start looking and then looking away, and I'm looking and looking away, trying to, you know, conditioning's taken over, and I'm trying to do the right thing.
Yes. And so if there's only one other person in your group, then you might even let that person know that you're practicing in these different ways, practicing facilitating in these different ways. I don't think we need to keep any mystery about any of this, quite frankly. So with Tracy, you know, I've always meditated with not making any eye contact, and I'm trying a new practice now, and there.
Yeah, that feels real good.
Yeah, yeah. And then you get to see, you know, you do the one for a while, you do the other for a while, and then perhaps when you have practiced with both of them, you'll just slip into a natural kind of rhythm with, I don't know if this is where you're going with this, but there are times when I'm facilitating someone and they are obviously in a very either conflicted, very emotional place. They're struggling through something, and it is not the time to interrupt them. And so when that's going on, I'm not watching them. I just drop my eyes and, you know, do a 45-degree angle, and I sense when they're ready to interact again.
Yeah, and that's what that brings up to me. I'm realizing now, just at this moment, I'm going through a process that is, I'm realizing the whole premise is that I must have been doing it wrong, and maybe in those interactions that I'm talking about, that I actually is sort of just fine.
Yes.
This is cool.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Because it's all about the spirit of inquiry, isn't it? So we're going along, we're doing something, there's an awareness brought to it, we get to see what karmic conditioning is there, we get to see what you know, the voices want to tell us, and it's all our practice. We don't want to get into any kind of idea that we're ever going to do this right. All we're going to ever do is do this
practice.
Thank you.
Because if we get into anything else, we really are doing people a disservice. If we've let our, and I'm not saying, Dan, I'm launched on another, you know, I'm launched on a something for me, not for you. But if our egos take it over to the point where it's all about me doing it perfectly or me doing it well, me being the right facilitator, then I'm doing a disservice to people. Because it's not, I don't want to model some sort of spiritual perfection. I want to be somebody doing my awareness practice. And if I get to do it with other people, then that's great. But it's not about me. And so facilitation is more that than anything else we do in life, I think. Facilitation is being able to just be there and let life mirror back to a person what life wants them to see. That's it. We're just facilitating a person's relationship with their own authentic being.
This is Dan.
Is this who?
Dan.
Hello.
Dan Lemert.
Okay. Hi.
I wonder, this is switching a little bit, but you had mentioned, you know, that what we do off the cushion is what we're going to bring, you know, that's what we're practicing because that's what we're going to bring to the cushion. By practicing in the world, you know, we bring it to the cushion. And you had said at our last call something to the effect of facilitate when, you know, every chance you get.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered if you could say more about that, because my sense of it so far in just playing with that is that in the world there are opportunities that come up where the skills we learn in facilitating can be applied almost directly, and other times where it would be presumptuous. So I wondered if you could just talk more about that.
Well, I quite frankly can't imagine a time when it would be presumptuous. If you have an example.
Well, what I was thinking, as this was facilitating on it, because when we're reflecting back to somebody, I have teenagers, and I'm around teenagers a lot, and they don't always appreciate. would be an example where it does feel, if that's not skillful at that time.
Well, there are a couple of things about that for me. One is, I don't know anybody at any age who doesn't appreciate somebody giving them their full attention and doing the very best they can to be present to whatever is going on with that person.
Mm-hmm.
I would think teenagers especially.
Right.
Because they don't get a lot of that. They don't get a lot of somebody being there working really hard to understand what it is that they're attempting to communicate or what they're going through or whatever. So now if what they're responding to is a self-consciousness, then I could see that. But if it's made clear that I'm doing this because I'm trying not to go off into my stuff, for instance, with a teenager, I would feel comfortable saying, you know how often I stop listening to you about two sentences in because you say something and I start lecturing you and telling you how life is and how you ought to be? And they'll probably nod and say, yes, I know that very well. Well, I'm trying not to do that. And so this is my way of trying to reel myself in so that I can be present with you and actually hear what you're saying. Yeah? So I think that, again, if we are coming from a place of of honesty and sincerity, where I really do want to be present with you, then I can't imagine even this teenager being offended by that.
Yeah, this is really helpful to hear, because what I'm seeing for myself is that I haven't seen, well, the times I'm thinking of, when conditioning has stepped in and taken over. Because what you described is pretty clear. And I know that in my heart, and yet I can see where conditioning has come in at times and said, well, this isn't going to work here. This isn't going to work.
Yeah.
And so
we get to look at, well, what are we talking about, work?
Yeah.
You know, does that mean I'm not going to prevail? Well, yeah, that could, with facilitation, that's what could happen. I might not win this round. But is that really what I want in a relationship, to win a round? Or do I really, truly want to be in relationship with this person? Now, if it's a child and it's one of those, I get it. I really do. I understand. And, you know, I'm the worst parent on the planet. And, no, you know, you're not going to go for a weekend party at your friend's house when their parents are in Hawaii. Thanks. You know, then you see, after that, there's the facilitation about the feelings or whatever it is, or however that plays out. So, but the point is to be in a situation that really enables us to be present with the person. So the outcome might be the same, but that doesn't mean we don't want to be open to whatever the other person's life experience is.
This is very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Sherry, it's Ramita.
Hey, Ramita.
Hello. I just saw something for the first time. I think what I've been doing is using reflection with the intention of helping someone else hear what they're saying. And I'm thinking that maybe I'm supposed to be doing it to get clear, to make sure I'm hearing.
Well, and I would say it's a little of both.
Okay.
Yeah, I would want to do it so that both people benefit. I mean, there is, that is a huge part of reflective listening, is that the other person gets to hear what they're saying. And oftentimes, of course, we don't, because we're all caught up in the story and we're not listening to ourselves. That, you know, a great deal of sorrow and sadness happens because we don't listen to ourselves. And if you can do that, it's an indication that you're there.
Yeah, so there's a balancing that happens, being present to reflect, and both participants get to move to a different place.
Yeah. Yeah, and in that situation with Jan, that I would think would be with any relationship, you know, it's one thing if it's a reflective listening buddy, you know, I mean, really, you just wish them well, but you're not personally involved in their lives. But if it's somebody that's really close to you, then to me, part of reflecting is so that I don't get triggered.
Right, right.
So they get to hear what they're saying to me, and I get to watch what arises in me. And I get to stick with reflecting, even though what I want to do is, again, you know, tell them how it is.
Right. And, you know, telling them how it is, you know, practicing letting life speak through me,
mm-hmm.
It happens in my work, my professional life, and then it gets filtered when I'm facilitating practice.
Can you say more about that?
Well, I had an interaction with a woman today who was talking about strong emotions, and I was able to reflect them and use my own words to help her gain clarity about the experience. She was grieving. She didn't talk about grief, but I was able to say, this is grief, and that sort of thing. And she was able to go deeper each time I did that.
Mm-hmm.
I can only imagine this conditioned mind that's getting in the way of me doing that and putting some rules in place for me to do that when I'm facilitating people in the context of practice.
Yes, and of course it's a very dangerous place to sort of lead someone like that, right? So if I'm upset about something and I'm talking to you about that and you're pretty sure that what's going on with me is that I'm grieving, but I haven't I haven't caught on to that, or I'm not in touch with that yet, or whatever is going on with me. To label what I'm experiencing is a bit of a risk,
yes.
Right? If it were a question, does it feel like grief? Does it feel like you're grieving? That kind of thing. It can be a leap for people. If I'm not ready to face that, then that could be a really rugged moment for me. If you're wrong, or if I'm just in resistance, you could be dead on. But I don't want to go there. Again,
right.
it can be dicey. So we can try things and see what happens.
What occurs to me is something else that we've been talking about is to do more of my work life as practice and practice facilitating in my life. So it's not practicing my professional role, I'm practicing my facilitation role in my work life, and then let it come back and the other way.
Yes. Yeah. Because I suspect that practicing facilitation in your professional life would take you farther in the direction you want to go than would practicing what you're taught is the professional way to be.
Yeah. It seems like I'm trusting life more in one situation than I am in the other. I'm trusting life more in my professional role to guide me than I am trusting life to guide me in my facilitation and practice role.
Yes. And so if we put those two things together, if you were using the same tools, then it might be an easier transition when the circumstances change.
Yeah.
Right?
Very
helpful. So then you're doing the two things. You're using the tools of facilitation, and you're practicing letting life guide you and speak through you. There. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Again, whether you're at work, you're at a meditation group, you're at the grocery store, it's all
right.
Going to be, you're looking to the same place for guidance, and you're using the same tools to express guidance that you're receiving.
Yes. Very good. Thank you very much, Sherry.
You are so welcome.
Sure.
Danny?
Did I heard two. I heard Danny and Bob. Shall we go alphabetical? Bob.
Okay. So I've been looking this week at facilitating someone who comes not with their own agenda, but not really for why we're there. You know, it seems like they're either seeking either training or some sort of guidance. So that, you know, one thing that happened recently was in our DPAP support call, someone had asked, well, a number of people in our call seemed like they weren't really there to talk about their support plans. It was something else. And then someone who was obviously really, really new to practice, who just had a very basic question about meditation, how to meditate. And when that person asked their question, you know, what occurred to me in the moment was, and I said this, was, well, that's just a really great question to call into open air. Maybe ask Sherry about that.
Yeah, good.
And you know, in retrospect, you know, since then, tradition has a lot of ideas of what I could have said, but that's what really came to me in the moment.
Yeah. And I would agree. That's exactly right. And it is a tricky place, isn't it? When there is that suspicion that the person is there doesn't know what's going on, is there for a completely different reason, just doesn't get it. You know, all of those kinds of how do we kind of bring them into the fold? How do we not lose everybody else? Because, you know, if somebody is there with a really different agenda, it can undermine the whole group. Now, it can, of course, be great practice opportunity, but a lot of people, it takes a deep practice to see something really out there as a practice opportunity. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So, what do you do in group when that happens?
Well, you know, I don't know that I've had a lot of experience with that. And I think that's why exactly why I gave that answer. That's where it seemed like where I was at.
Mm-hmm.
In general, our group is, you know, it's relatively small. It's almost always the same people over and over and over again. And in the same sort of situation where, like, a slightly more experienced person or someone who's been around the Sangha longer asks a question, you know, that it works to reflect that question back. So that's
mm-hmm.
Whereas, obviously, for this other person, that's not what it's thinking.
Right. Right. Yeah. We were kidding about that somewhere recently, about, the person says to you, do I have to hold my hands in that cosmic mudra when I sit in Burmese? And the facilitator says, so you're asking if you always need to put your hands in the cosmic mudra when you sit in Burmese? The person says, yeah. It's like that we can only reflect for so long without giving them some kind of information, right?
Right.
So then to refer them to the best place to get that information seems like a really good approach.
Yeah, it does. And it's just, I think the thing that is the more challenging thing just for my own practice is just to do what we've been talking about, which is, you know, no reviews. And just, you know, that's what it was, and that's what came to me in the moment, and, you know, that's it.
Oh, absolutely. That's just job one for a facilitator, isn't it? If we didn't have any other goal in mind, that would be a good enough reason to facilitate. Just, I stand up, I make a show, I leave the room, and that's it. There is no conversation whatsoever about any of it. And if life has information for me, life will drop it in.
Yeah, it was really helpful just in, you know, in through the rest of that call. And then since then, just for, you know, on the recording, I think Jen had said, you know, just walk away from it like it never happened.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I've been working with.
Yeah. Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
Now, I just, so I'm clear, because I'm not sure I am. You do know that was a really good answer, right?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Okay, good. I just couldn't tell.
Because in this call, you know, what occurred to me was two things. One is that, you know, that the person, you know, they needed, you know, meditation instruction, which wasn't going to happen on the call. And
okay.
And the other thing was that if I get into that with this person, then that certainly, that sets the tone for every call that comes after it.
Yes.
If that's what we're here to talk about.
Yes, exactly. And at the same time, you don't want to make them feel stupid for having asked a question that was, you know, didn't really belong in that call, but because they want to know how to meditate. We really want them to know that. So how do we get them the help and support that they need without leaving the integrity of what it is that we're about as a group? Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Was it Danny?
Yes. Hi.
Hey.
Back when we were talking about maintaining custody of the eyes, I had an aha moment. But before that, I want to say a few minutes ago, I had another aha moment when you said we don't want to model spiritual perfection. We want to model doing awareness practice. That just really hit home.
Mm.
It was very helpful.
Yeah, because as we know, those the voices, it's just such fertile ground for karmic conditioning, self-hate. You know, you there are these standards for facilitation, and then I'm going to beat you up over every imagined error that you've made, and that's not what we're doing.
Yeah.
So if that's not what we're doing, all the standards immediately fall away, because that's not what I'm doing. I'm not trying to do anything except practice.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a very helpful, concise formulation. The first aha I had was about the rug that's in the room, my living room, that we sit around during our sitting group. And it's a bright, colorful, intricate tribal rug. And I realize that in the past when I've given thought to it, I have thought, well, it's something to look down at, and it helps people maintain custody of the eyes. And what I saw a few minutes ago was actually no. By providing something for people to look at, it helps not maintain custody of the eyes.
It helps and to lose consciousness.
Yes, yes. And so I think what I'm going to start doing is rolling up the rug and moving it out along with what the pieces of furniture that I move out before a group. So that was very helpful to see.
Yeah, good. That's why, you know, we strive for white walls, right? So that that what we look at doesn't it doesn't give us anything except ourselves.
Yeah.
I didn't make the connection. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
That's why we do this awareness practice, huh?
Thank you.
Thank you, Danny.
Sherry, this is Jan. We have time for one more person.
Okay.
Next.
Hey, Lynette, is that you?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
So, I'm actually looking at custody of the eyes as well, and I find that I give eye contact when I'm facilitating, but when I'm not, so like after the reading, while I'm waiting for somebody to respond, I think I've been trying to figure out what to do with my eyes, and I've been practicing with a bit of not being odd spiritually. So, but I'm like, it's kind of a balance, I think, between. I mean, I don't want to kind of stare at people like they need to respond. So, it's kind of, what do I do in that space?
Yeah. Well, that's a good one, and that to me is one of those places where we practice our our expanded sensitivity, because in that situation, I would look at a place probably two-thirds of the way across the room so that I would have enough peripheral vision that I could see someone raise their hand. So I would not be making eye contact with anybody during that wait.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't even care if somebody put their hands up and I didn't see them. Sooner or later, somebody would get uncomfortable and say, they have their hands up. But I'm with you. I wouldn't want to be looking at people and perhaps making somebody feel pressured to interact when they weren't ready to.
Uh-huh. So because I've been kind of fluctuating with, do I need to give more eye contact or just, it feels safe to me. And so what I'm worrying about and looking at it, is it just my own self-consciousness?
Yeah, well, possibly, because it is, all these things that we're doing are uncomfortable for us in terms of our social conditioning, right? So to be able to practice, there's a gap, there's a pause. You know, it's like you're facilitating somebody, and they just don't say anything. You know, for a really long period of time. And can we all just sit there and be with that person as they're doing whatever they're doing internally and wait for them to the place where they have something else they want to say? Or, you know, I finish the reading and everybody is looking at it or doing whatever it is that they're doing. Can we all just sit there together in silence while that happens?
Yes. What I'm looking at is if I have the comfortableness, then that's good.
If what?
If I'm comfortable. If I
think
I'm comfortable enough in that situation, then hopefully I'm projecting being comfortable.
That's a big
part. And I'm trying to get there.
Huh?
And I'm trying to get to that comfortable spot.
Yes. So, there we are, we're on retreat and we are waiting on the porch for something. Can we just stand there? Can we just be all right just being there?
Mm-hmm.
If that's that same... Can we be comfortable just being inward, being sensitive to whoever is there and whatever else is going on, but not feeling a need to dispel that social discomfort by interacting in some meaningless way?
Yes. And so my comfort zone is more not interacting. So that's what I'm looking at.
So you would
so
be fine
to,
with that.
Huh?
You would be fine with that.
I'm fine with that on the porch. I'm not fine when I'm in front of a group.
Uh-huh. Well, then that's your edge, isn't it?
Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Wow. Who would have thought one little... Don't lose consciousness, keep custody of the eyes, to bring all that forward.
That's a lot, huh?
Yeah, and it struck me while I was listening to people interact with you, a couple of things. One, back to what Tracy was processing with you about, that you know, we each come with our interpretation of what any of this means, and how valuable it is to have a forum to hear you speak about it, because it's, you know, this is the forum for us to learn about that. Otherwise, just, you know, kind of making it up.
Exactly. And in fact, the sad part is, as we know, we're not making it up.
Yes.
Karmic conditioning, self-hate is making it up. And so back to that... you know, that awareness that all we're doing is practicing awareness, then we just can't go wrong. We can't lose. So you know, if I had been, you know, I've been with my sitting group, I've had people bow three times before they leave the room, because I thought that's what we were supposed to do. I learned that somewhere. Great, good, swell. That's what I was doing. Now I see that was a misunderstanding. Good, that's the end of it. Then I can just announce to my group, new procedure. I've just realized that we don't need to bow three times before we leave the room. Actually, our practice is just to bow once. So here we go. Because that's what we're modeling for people.
Mm-hmm.
To be present, to allow life to train us, to guide us, to inform us. It's to be open, that childlike, innocent, thy will be done. Use me, form me into anything that's going to be helpful. I'd like to be helpful.
Thank you for all of that, as usual.
Well, thank you. Thank everybody for being here. Again, you know, it's just such a thrill when I hear that roll call. And, you know, just my favorite people in the world are on this call. Thank you.
I just have a few little housekeeping things before we wrap up. Won't take more than 60 seconds or so. I did not get people the information about how to Skype. I just want you all to know that is forthcoming. Don't lose faith. And I commit to having that information to you before our practice morning. I know that's important for a number of people in the group. Wanted to mention that we've seen a number of requests now on the blog for guidance, which is great. And our guidance coordinator is starting down the road with those, so you'll be seeing responses there over the next week or so start coming through. On the email I sent about this call, I want to make a correction. It said that technical questions can be directed to the facilitator communicator, and I meant to say the coordinator. There's a lot of communicator coordinator people. And so the facilitators at livingcompassion.org is the email to send any technical questions to. Our next group event for the program will be our practice morning next Sunday, and you'll be getting emails again about call-in information for those pods. And the recording for this call will be... We'll send you the link to that sometime in the next few days. Well, I think that's it on my end. Sherry, anything else you wanted to say before we complete for this evening?
No. I feel really grateful and thrilled that this group of people is out there interacting with folks in the world and providing a place to do practice together. And I'm really happy. So thank you again.
All right, everyone. Thanks for being on the call, and good night.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.